Hi, welcome to Bookie. Today we will unlock the book Freud, A Life for Our Time. As you may already know, Sigmund Freud was an Austrian Jewish psychiatrist, psychologist, and the founder of psychoanalysis. His psychoanalytic theories are an inescapable theme of contemporary intellectual life. They influence everyone's outlook and permeate every aspect of our lives. Freud's theory of psychoanalysis has changed the way we perceive ourselves and others. He shook up the world, created myths, and became a myth. Speaking of Freud, people will generally comment that he was a genius. Without his work, we would lack the deepest understanding of ourselves. It is fair to argue that the entirety of human thought in the 20th century had been influenced more or less by Freudian psychoanalysis. In recent years, however, there have been constant debate on Freud's intellectual legacy. On the one hand, supporters see him as a master, a giant, and a cultural hero, a mentor who could guide people to the hidden regions of the mind. On the other side, critics call him a Jew who converted to Roman Catholicism, a misled psychologist, and a dictator in the field of psychoanalysis, even describing Freud as a plagiarist and a swindling Cagliostro. In this bookie, we will unlock a work that sets his biography and achievements in psychoanalysis in their historical context. The book interweaves the historical macrocosm with the microcosm of an individual life. It is written with dynamism and fine attention to detail. Although Freud destroyed large numbers of manuscripts before his death, Gay-read through almost everything remaining he could get his hands on. He made this biography all the more precious by integrating this wealth of material into a coherent whole. The New York Times sees this book as a judicious original biography, scrupulously grounded in close readings of Freud's work. The Washington Post believes it is the most comprehensive, complete, and detailed biography of Freud to date. A great author writing about another to produce a masterpiece for our times. Born in Berlin in 1923, the author Peter Gay was a German Jew who spent his youth in Nazi Germany before fleeing with his family to the United States. He died in 2015 at the age of 91. Gay received his PhD from Columbia University and taught at Yale. He wrote more than 25 books, such as The Enlightenment, An Interpretation, and Weimar Culture, The Outsider as Insider. Many of his books won the National Book Award, and he received the American Historical Association's Award for Scholarly Distinction in 2004. Now, we will approach the key contents of this book chronologically. Part 1, Early Development and Studies. Part 2, Advancing His Career. Part 3, Prestige and Later Theoretical Refinements. Sigmund Freud was born a citizen of the Austro-Hungarian Empire in the small Moravian town of Freiburg on May 6, 1856. The Freud family was large. His mother Amalia was 20 years younger than his father Jacob, a Jewish wool merchant. He had five younger sisters and a younger brother, as well as two older half-brothers. Being raised in such a large family, the young Freud was often confused by the subtle complexities of relationships between people, such as siblings competing for maternal affection and his complicated relationship with his parents. In these family relationships, the young Freud had to repress many emotions. His early experiences nurtured the buds of the young Freud's interests in psychology and psychoanalysis. In adulthood, after founding psychoanalysis, he used the method of dream interpretation to continue a self-analysis of his childhood problems. His family was not well off, but the young Freud was favored among his older siblings. He was the only one who had his own room, providing a quiet atmosphere for learning. Books were Freud's luxury. In his room, their number increased. He often stayed there alone, reading, sleeping, and even eating in the room. At school, he was ambitious and confident. For 7 years, he was at the top of his class, so his teachers granted him special status and rarely required him to take internal exams. As much as his yearning for fame, Freud's choice of a suitable college and future career was a painful source of frustration and internal conflict. Initially, he wanted to study law, but like Charles Darwin, he desired to travel on a ship as a researcher, engaging with the natural world. Drawn to Darwinism, In 1873, he entered the University of Vienna to study medicine. Freud read widely and devoted his early college years to studying the humanities and philosophy. This would later benefit his psychoanalytic writing. After a long course of medical study, Freud received his bachelor's degree in 1881. In 1882, Freud met Martha Bernays. Slender and attractive, Freud fell in love with the lovely girl at first sight and immediately began a passionate pursuit. After 2 months, they became engaged. But Viennese society's norms at the time, as well as the couple's religious beliefs and family upbringing, decreed chastity. In the 4 years before their marriage, their only intimate outlet was kissing and hugging. In these four endless years, Freud's experience of frustrated sexual desire was intense. It provided the background for his later theories, arguing that most psychological disorders originated from the repression of sexual drives. During their prenuptial separation, they could only communicate through letters. Despite the repression he endured, Freud's passion for Miss Bernays remained undiminished. Once, Freud climbed one of the towers, Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. He wrote to Martha confessing, "One climbs up 300 steps, it is very dark, very lonely, on every step I could have given you a kiss if you had been with me, and you would have reached the top quite out of breath and wild." Their physical separation made Freud preoccupied with the kisses he could not give Martha. In one letter, he used her absence to justify his addiction to cigars. "Smoking is indispensable if one has nothing to kiss." In this period, he quoted a favorite verse of Schiller, "Hunger and love, that after all is the true philosophy." In subsequent years, Freud would resort to this line more than once to illustrate his theory of the drives. Hunger stood for the ego drives which serve the survival of the self, while love, of course a polite name for sexual drives, serves the survival of the species. In September 1886, he married Martha. They had 6 children together. To improve the family's standard of living, Freud had to give up doing laboratory research, an impoverished position that he loved, and joined Vienna's General Hospital as a doctor. Surrounded every day by crying babies, bottles, and diapers, and busy at the hospital, he was not distracted. In this situation, he conceived the basic tenets of psychoanalysis. Freud spent a period of time working and studying in Paris. There, he attended lectures given by the charismatic intellectual Jean-Martin Charcot. Charcot was a pioneer in medicine and a social activist. Amid the conservative social climate in Paris at the time, he concluded that hysteria was in fact a psychological disease. Charcot had a tremendous impact on Freud. Arguably, Charcot's influence drew Freud completely away from clinical research and projected him into the more speculative field of psychology. In addition to listening to his lectures, Freud also witnessed Charcot's demonstrations of hypnosis and became interested. In hypnosis, Freud recognized transference, a patient's displacement of strong emotional feelings from one subject, usually a powerful but unassailable figure in their lives, to another, often the psychotherapist. For the subsequent application of his theoretical ideas on sexuality, he made hypnotherapy an important part of his therapeutic work. The contemporary psychologist Joseph Breuer also influenced the early development of Freud's psychoanalytic theory. Breuer used the cathartic method to treat a hysterical patient, known as Anna O. She suffered from acute agitation and exhibited abnormal behaviors. Breuer asked Anna O. to vocalize an account of her experiences. In this way, after giving full vent to her emotions, her symptoms disappeared. Later, Breuer informed Freud about Anna O.'s treatment. In this case, Freud believed that the cause of the hysteria were traumatic experiences and unpleasant memories. These memories were repressed, but were nevertheless an active subconscious force, relentless and persistent. Although they seemed to have been forgotten, unconscious memories manifested in the form of hysteria. Based on his understanding of cathartic method, Freud began to develop a new therapeutic technique known as free association. In the counseling setting, a patient is encouraged to re-experience traumatic events. The therapeutic goal is to temper emotions through associative recall. By documenting his patients' free associations, Freud refined his psychoanalytic theory case by case. In 1900, Freud published The Interpretation of Dreams, a book that brought him many new followers. After this milestone, Freud's status as the father of psychoanalysis was in place. Psychoanalytic theory is the cornerstone of modern psychology. We will now provide a brief introduction to its key components. First, psychoanalysis primarily concerns three levels of the mind. This is described as the topographical model. In this model, thoughts and feelings are mapped out across three interactive mental systems, namely conscious, preconscious, and unconscious. All human mental activity takes place between these different levels of consciousness. Unconscious habits are for a large part responsible for the decisions people make. The second component is the theory of personality concerning the id, the ego, and the superego. The id is unconscious, it is the gathering place of primitive desires and drives. By contrast, the superego is the injunction of moral consciousness, prohibitions that differentiate human society from the law of animals. The ego is the rational part of human beings. It often faces contradictions and must enact reconciliation. It does this according to the reality principle. The reality principle moderates the pleasure-seeking id's purely selfish interests with the superego's pursuit of social morality. Freud's many compellingly written books present his clinical case studies and theories. In 1895, the concept of psychoanalysis appeared for the first time when Freud and Breuer published studies on hysteria. 1900 saw the publication of the groundbreaking The Interpretation of Dreams. This work introduced the concepts of the id and the theory of the unconscious, as well as arguing that dreams are disguised fulfillments of infantile and unconscious desires. The sexual awareness and motivation of children and the Oedipus complex turned people's minds upside down, winning the book accolades and criticism. The Interpretation of Dreams has been called the greatest works of all time. In 1905, Freud went on to publish Dora, an analysis of a case of hysteria which focused on the treatment of neuroses through the analysis of dreams. In 1909, President G. Stanley Hall of Clark University invited Freud to receive an honorary degree and deliver a series of lectures for the university's 20th anniversary. Here he met with American psychological luminaries, marking the internationalization of the psychoanalytic movement. If greatness can be measured by one's influence on future generations, then Freud is undoubtedly the greatest psychologist of all time. There is hardly a field exploring human nature that has developed with no trace of his influence. Freudian theory has influenced literature, philosophy, theology, ethics, aesthetics, political science, sociology, and popular psychology. However, are the claims of psychoanalysis exaggerated or does it live up to its reputation? Next, we will analyze the next phase in Freud's academic trajectory. From the fall of 1902, every Wednesday, Freud met with a group of physicians at his residence. The discussion focused on cases of neuroses, psychoanalytic theory, and self-analysis. This gathering was the famous Wednesday Psychological Society. At the start, the Wednesday Psychology Society consisted of just 5 participants. 5 people were in complete harmony with each other without any arguments. They were like pioneers exploring a newly discovered land, with Freud as their leader. By 1906, the society had swollen to 17 members. 12 of these continued to speak of psychoanalysis with unity and enthusiasm, but by this time, some members had become hostile to one another, even attacking their counterparts with harsh words. The once genial society was now a forum for contentious argument. In early 1908, hostile scenes at the Wednesday Psychological Society evolved into regular outbursts. Eventually, Freud felt constrained to disband the Wednesday Psychological Society and reorganized it as the Vienna Psychoanalytic Society. By 1909, this new entity was attracting many scholars from the US, England, and Italy. Attendance continued to increase dramatically, with more and more devotees wanting to visit Freud. As his followers grew, so did the influence of the psychoanalytic school. In 1930, In recognition of his importance, Freud was awarded the Goethe Prize. In 1936, he became a member of the Royal Society. Beginning with the interpretation of dreams, Freud's lifelong research related to exploring the unconscious, the structure and formation of the personality, and people's inner worlds. Following this formative work, he and his followers quickly elaborated on the fundamental ideas in divergent ways. Bitter disagreements grew between Freud and others. Their once supportive project split into many factions. Some psychoanalysts broke with his approach and alienated Freud, developing their own original psychoanalytic schools. What happened? Let's consider the instance of Freud and Otto Rank, whom Freud inspired to pursue psychological research. For 20 years, he followed Freud as his most devoted assistant and most creative student. Rank spared no effort to apply psychoanalysis to the fields of literature and art. As Freud's theories matured, Rank also had his own insights and original ideas. Both he and Freud combined science and art, positivism and romanticism, but in very different proportions. One was a scientist with an artist's temperament, and the other was an artist interested in science. Eventually, Rank and Freud drifted apart and later went their separate ways. In another example, Sándor Ferenczi visited Freud in 1908. Later he accompanied Freud and others on the visit to Clark University in the United States. He then became a follower of Freud. For nearly 20 years, they maintained a respectful teacher-disciple, father-son relationship. However, while introducing innovative ways to improve his therapeutic techniques, Ferenczi began to move away from classic Freudian methods. Finally, he broke away from the man himself. The most famous departure of the formerly like-minded took place between Freud and his brilliant protégé Carl G. Jung. We also have a bookie of Jung's autobiography Memories, Dreams, Reflections, in which you can find further information. Freud chose Jung to be the president of the Psychoanalytic Society. They maintained their friendship and a teacher-disciple relationship for a long time, but eventually, they still fell out. The rupture was so momentous and antagonistic that on one occasion, Freud suffered a brief fit in Jung's presence. The break also took its toll on Jung, who struggled to redeem his credibility in his later theoretical research. He developed a cultural approach to theoretical and clinical branches of analytical psychology, exploring well-known concepts, such as the collective unconscious and the midlife crisis. At this time, Freud also completed a series of studies and explorations, such as On Narcissism, An Introduction. Although they addressed similar themes, and their works echoed each other from a distance, the two men never met again, nor were they reconciled. Ernest Jones was a friend who never split with Freud. Although Jones moved to live in Canada, he made several trips to the United States where he founded the U.S. Psychoanalytic Society. Later, Jones also founded the London Psychoanalytic Society and the International Journal of Psychoanalysis, which significantly enlarged the influence of psychoanalysis. During Hitler's reign of terror against the Jews, Jones mobilized many of his personal contacts to help Freud move and settle in Britain. In his later years, he wrote a biography, The Life and Work of Sigmund Freud. Lou Andreas Salomé was another friend who stayed with Freud until the end. Brilliant, knowledgeable, frank, compassionate, optimistic, elegant, with a wonderful sense of humor, Andreas Salomé was much loved and admired. She earned the respect of Freud and other psychoanalytic scholars. Freud was her lifelong friend. Despite her seniority, she was also a close friend of Freud's youngest daughter Anna. Later, encouraged by Freud, Andreas Salomé not only published numerous papers on psychoanalysis but also opened a psychotherapy clinic with a research facility. There are many such stories of Freud and his followers. So how was his relationship with the patients he treated? Daniel Paul Schrebel was one of Freud's patients. He served as a chief judge, but due to delusions he suffered nervous breakdowns, several times ending up in a sanatorium. He wrote about his experiences in Memoirs of My Nervous Illness. This memoir became the material for Freud's analysis. In the course of this analysis, later published as the Schrebel case, Freud developed new psychoanalytic topics such as gender identity, the femininity complex, reversal, projection, narcissism sublimated as homosexuality, and paranoid defenses against annihilation. There were other patients treated by Freud with extraordinary success. At the age of 5, little Hans underwent analysis with Freud for his phobia. He went on to become a successful musician, writer, and opera singer. Freud also treated his father, who went on to become a psychoanalyst. Another patient, Alexander Franz, was a Hungarian emigre growing up in the United States. After Freud's successful treatment, he went on to become a physician too, specializing in the psychoanalysis of mental and physical disorders and making outstanding contributions to criminal psychology. Thaddeus Ames was ailing until Freud treated him in Vienna. He became a medical doctor at the University of Michigan, a neurologist, and psychoanalyst. These former patients, step by step, directly or indirectly, expanded the influence of Freud's psychoanalysis, so much so that Freud became a household name. People would even jest that psychoanalysis could solve all ills. In practice, Freud was a rigorous and determined scholar. He founded the Psychological Society to focus attention on his work, rallying many like-minded people to support the expanding field of psychoanalysis. He refined and developed his theories in tandem with his clinical practice. Eventually, his achievements in both academic and clinical practice made him a psychological guru. However, as his fame and profile expanded, the international and domestic situation deteriorated dramatically. What impact did this have on Freud's academic development and personal life? On a notorious day, in 1914 in Sarajevo, a young radical assassinated Archduke Francis Ferdinand and his consort, the heirs to the Austro-Hungarian throne. This event sounded the death knell for the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and a few weeks later, World War I broke out. At first, when the cruel war erupted, Freud was shocked, but later he became calm, ignored the war, and began to concentrate on his theories. The conflict did not seriously interfere with Freud's academic activities. On the contrary, the psychoanalytic movement's development was extensive during this period. But the war left Freud's clinic with little income, his sons and sons-in-law were unemployed, and Freud had to resort to borrowing to make ends meet. As the war dragged on for many years, the turbulent international situation deteriorated. After the First World War, the Second World War brought further devastation. In 1938, under Hitler's reign of terror, the German army occupied Austria. Nazi persecution of Jews fell on Freud and his family. Their property was confiscated. And their eldest son Martin and daughter Anna were summoned for questioning. The war caused Freud to consider the theme of death more deeply. It was a subject he had focused on for many years. As a way to explain the darker and more destructive sides of human behavior, he conceived of an additional drive, the death drive. The death drive was the counterpart to Eros, represented in the theory of libido as a drive to pleasure in life. On the other hand, the death drive has two manifestations. One, inward-directed destruction, and the other, outward-directed aggression. The first aspect is often characterized by a tendency toward self-destruction and suicidal behavior, while the latter is aggressive, represented by violence. For Freud, violence is not only present in brutality and killings, it is also in the jokes and sarcasm of everyday life and in sports that involve competition and confrontation. In Freud's theory, Eros and the death drive have a dualistic relationship. His book Civilization and Its Discontents elucidates the outcomes of his thinking around the death drive. We have also produced this great work as a bookie for you. The war years impacted Freud's personal life as much as they disturbed his academic research. In 1923, the same year that The Ego and the ID was published, the Grim Reaper knocked on his door. In the spring of that year, he developed a leukoplastic growth in his oral cavity. It was later confirmed to be oral cancer. Freud did not want to broadcast such an affliction to the world. He had a rhinologist operate on him. While he recovered from the operation, his health was still badly affected, but he didn't let it interrupt his work. he pressed ahead with theoretical research and writing. To suppress his oral cancer, he underwent multiple surgical procedures and X-ray treatments. The disease progressed rapidly, compromising Freud's ability to speak and eat when the surgeon was obliged to insert a prosthesis into his mouth. The man, so familiar with the application of psychoanalysis to help others, now analyzed the severity of his own condition. He told his grandson, "Don't try to live forever, you will not succeed." While on the one hand, Freud suffered physically, he still had to deal with political turmoil on the other. Following his family's persecution during the Nazi occupation, many of his papers and books were burned. Under Hitler's reign of terror, many Jews chose suicide, but strong willpower and resilience was Freud's natural temperament. For Freud, there were only two imperatives of survival through that hard time, described in letters to his son: to see you all together, and to die in freedom. It was only through his friends Ernest Jones and Princess Marie Bonaparte's intervention that Freud, fearful of the present and confused about the future, decamped to Britain. There in London, he lived and continued his work. His new home, 20 Maresfield Gardens, was shaded by tall trees and surrounded by flower gardens. The decorations, furniture, and displays of antiques mirrored Freud's Viennese residence. As soon as Freud moved in, 20 Maresfield Gardens became as famous as Berggasse 19 in Vienna. When his children took a taxi home, the driver heard the address and said, "Oh, it's Dr. Freud's place." Martha was surprised that some letters addressed only to Freud in London were delivered to the house when they had only lived there for 3 days. She exclaimed, "In short, for the first time in late in life I have experienced what fame means." By this time, Martha Freud was very old. In London, Freud's youngest daughter Anna cared for the home and enabled his work. Anna Freud was born in 1895, the same year psychoanalysis was born, with Freud and Breuer's studies on hysteria. She was the youngest of Freud's 6 children and the only one to become a psychotherapist. By the time the Freud family arrived in Britain, Anna's reputation was already well established in the field of psychoanalysis. She assisted her father while conducting her research on child development. Despite his daughter's care, by February 1939, Freud's cancer cells had advanced to a point where even a scalpel could not reach them. By June, the cancerous tissue began to suppurate, emitting a smell so unpleasant that even the family dog would not go near him. His personal physician Max Schur had no choice. He attended the Freud residence on September 19 to administer his last treatment, euthanasia. Freud, who had been in a coma, heard Herr Professor. He opened his eyes, waved to Schur, and then fell back to sleep. 2 days later, when Schur was by his bedside again, Freud grabbed his hand tightly and said, "Schur, you remember our contract not to leave me in the lurch when the time had come. Now it is nothing but torture and makes no sense." Understanding, Schur indicated that he had not forgotten his promise. Freud grabbed Schur's hand again and said, "Talk it over with Anna, and if she thinks it's right, then make an end of it." Nearly 4 decades earlier, Freud had written to Oscar Pfister. Freud wondered what one would do when thoughts fail or words will not come. The letter continued, saying he could not suppress a tremor before this possibility. "That is why, with all the resignation before destiny that suits an honest man, I have one holy secret entreaty: only no invalidism, no paralysis of one's powers through bodily misery. Let us die in harness, as King Macbeth says." Schur had listened to one of Freud's lectures as a medical student. Freud's theories filled him with admiration. And later, he became Freud's personal physician. Freud's oral cancer originated around 1928, and he had suffered since that time. Discussing the prognosis, Schur had agreed that when the time came, he would administer morphine. Finally, Anna was persuaded, like her father, resigned to fate. Freud's decision was immediate when he knew his time was up. Schur wept, knowing that Freud was willing to accept death with dignity and without self-pity. So that he would sleep soundly, Schur injected Freud with 30 milligrams of morphine. When Freud became disturbed, he gave him a further injection. The next day, another dose, and Freud never woke up again. The great figure of world history died on September 23, 1939 at 3 a.m. He was 83 years old. Through wisdom and level-headedness, at the end, Freud went to his death freely. By saying goodbye to the world in this unequivocal way, he exercised his free will over death. Freud had in mind that death could be liberation, the living choosing to die, not death extinguishing life. In this way, he declared to the world that he had never lost control of his life. And that concludes our content for today. Here's a quick summary of this bookie. In the first section, we talked about Freud's adolescence and his thirst for knowledge, his diligent and serious course of study, and under the influence of a number of scholars, his gradual entry into the field of psychology. At this stage, he began to develop his personal theories. These preliminary psychoanalytic ideas include the topographical model of the mind, consciousness, the preconscious, and the unconscious, the theory of personality structure, the id, the ego, and the superego, and finally, the theory of psychosexual development. In the second part, we discussed how Freud's career evolved, how he attracted other pioneering talents and formed the first psychoanalytic society. Freud surrounded himself with friends and followers, but opinions differed and were hotly debated. Some broke from Freud to go their own way. During his life, Freud treated countless patients. Following their psychoanalytical treatment, many achieved remarkable success in their respective fields and even became psychoanalysts themselves. In the third section, we heard of the sudden changes in the national and international situation, persecution against the Jews, and how Freud did not stop working and writing. On the contrary, during this period, his theories matured, and psychoanalysis became studied and practiced internationally. Freud's achievements were extraordinary. In his later years and with the help from friends, Freud moved from Vienna to London where his youngest daughter Anna cared for him until the end of his life. Let's conclude this bookie with the following famous quotations. Hopefully, they will help you understand Freud more thoroughly. Do you dream a lot? It's good to dream because Freud said, a dream is the fulfillment of a wish. Is your own id contradictory to your ego? Freud said, where it is, there shall ego be. Have you ever told a lie? Correct it now. Sigmund Freud said, he that has eyes to see and ears to hear may convince himself that no mortal can keep a secret. If his lips are silent, he chatters with his fingertips, betrayal oozes out of him at every pore. Sigmund Freud also suggested that a psychologically healthy person should be able to love and to work, and as long as he can do these two things, nothing else is difficult.
Dir hat dieser Podcast gefallen? Dann klicke jetzt auf Abonnieren und empfehle ihn weiter. Bleib immer auf dem Laufenden und folge uns bei Twitter, Instagram und Facebook. Mehr Podcasts findest du auf meinpodcast.de.